This is a top 10 list of everything you need to do to reflect on the past two quarters before you can plan for the future.
Stalls, stalls.com. If you're ready to take your customer product to the next level, Stalls is the leader in heat printing solutions. They've got a code too, Hustler20, Hustler20, that saves 20% on your next DTF transfer order. Equipment, transfers, or support for your business, they are there. Also, they are running an incredible amount of live events that I find very fun and helpful to be at, partially learning everything, but also partially picking up and meeting a bunch of the people there. So that's really cool. Definitely check that out. GraphX Source. GraphX offers industry-leading outsourcing options for your shop by truly becoming part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo and any other shop management softwares. When it comes to SEPs, mockups, creative art, order management, digitizing, back office admin, and customer service, they have been around for over 40 years in the game. Hit them up and use the code PrintavoPod24 to get 50% off your first order to give it a try. They've obviously got full-time staffing solutions and then ad hoc as well, plus tons of other stuff. Check it out, graphxsource.com. Last but not least, Easy Way. Easy Way is continuing their monthly giveaway, $250. Easy win. Go to easyway.com/giveaway, put a reminder the first of each month and drop in your email address. They make reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their systems, chemicals, and equipment. Also, an incredible team there too. I mean, they've got a really, really great support system to be able to help you as a shop be able to grow your business, especially on the reclaim side. So don't miss the giveaway. Go to easyway.com/giveaway. $250 in product credit is the easiest way. All right, let's jump on in.
Diapers. Okay. Diapers. How are the diapers?
There's a lot of diapers. New baby, a lot of diapers, a lot of... Sometimes I think about it like a little product. Like I'm like, okay, if I make this little tweak and this tweak, then she'll sleep like this or whatever. And it just doesn't work like that.
What's the one biggest surprise of being a new dad that you didn't realize?
I think the immense amount of love you have and just like, you just end up staring at them all the time and just like looking at them. And I think there's a lot of excitement around, like, I'm really pumped to show her a bunch of new stuff or the things that I like or care about and have her experience those too. And then, a realization, and this is sort of like businessy, but is not, but like just allocating some money to making your life easier. Like whether it's the little nicer baby gear or it's help or it's like, you know, cleaning a house or like whatever it is, like to free up some time or just mental cycles from not thinking about or doing certain things is like worth so much when, you know, time is of the essence. So yeah, those are the things I've been sharing with some other friends who are going through it too.
Can you change a diaper with one hand?
Definitely not. And then this is totally unrelated, but also like an unreal props to moms out there. I mean, to see and watch that process, and it's not just pregnancy and the delivery. Then it's like when people don't talk about it, it's the recovery is like this whole other segment of it. That's really rough. So anyway, if we've got moms listening, hats off to you guys.
Go moms. Good for you. It's exciting.
Okay, iOS, I don't know if you saw this. I have to watch the summary, but I just wanted to share. It's not totally related, but iOS 27 is coming out later this year, and it's actually really nice. Like, it's what Siri was supposed to be and how powerful it is. You know, creating event invites very quickly, you know, searching for stuff that's more relevant. I mean, they really applied a true AI layer to your phone. It's sick. I'm really, really excited. It'll probably be the first time, and I'm sure they're going to gate it to the newer phone. So it may be the first time I upgraded my phone in a while too. But
so is it going to be running on like Claude or OpenAI, or is it Apple's AI? Like they called it Apple Intelligence. Is this backed by something else?
It's a good question. I don't know who's like the LLM in the background. I don't I don't know why they wouldn't want to have theirs and be in the race as well. I think a lot of people are worried about, hey, if I start sharing information with Claude or with ChatGPT? Like, where is this actually going? Like, is this, like, if I upload all this sensitive information, is this getting stored there to improve theirs? Or, and it seems like Apple's maybe taking a different approach with, hey, this is just running on your device and it's isolated there. And that's a pretty cool different route that they've taken. So I was excited to hear about that. And I think it's in September.
Bruce, have you started to notice? I feel like, okay, the point of this podcast actually wasn't to talk about AI, but I do want to spend 1 minute. Have you started to notice a lot of small businesses using AI to make their graphics, not in the printing industry, like outside of it, and they're starting to look the same?
Dude, I was telling a friend this that, you know, when people are building so many things and then they put the homepage together, it's like the homepages, you could tell, were totally, you know, one prompt AI generated. And I was like, it makes me not want to use it because I know this is just popped together in a couple days and I'm not sure what support I'm going to get or if how buggy or whatever.
So what I've noticed is, like, it'll be like a realtor or a barbershop or a car detailer, like some, you know, like, and they will make their graphic for social media using AI and it'll look exactly the same. It'll be the paintbrush font, like the streaky paintbrush font. And it'll have like a lot of boxes. There'll be way too much text on there. And it'll start to look the same. And you're starting to see it. Like ChatGPT makes the same magic tricks. So we were looking at it last week. If you want to use an AI model to help you with like graphic design, I mean like social graphics, it's really important that you upload your brand kit to it. And so like, you know, you can say like, I want to be using these type of fonts. These are the graphics and how I want them to look instead of just telling it to make you graphics. So just one little thing, I'm starting to see it a lot more. And I almost like, I want to save all of them so I can make like a highlight reel of like all of these that look the same. And then I was looking at it and then I was like, shit, 4 months ago, I made one that looked just like this. And I went back and I was like, oh no.
What is in your, for folks who haven't created a brand kit, what's in your folder?
So in our brand kit, or like an identity guide, we've had an agency do them, for the NIL store. They work on all of your logos, your typography, your language, your messaging. It's got samples of how your graphics should look, feel, it's got all your color guides in there. And then it also will have like examples of social graphics and how you want them to be. And then it also shows like how you shouldn't use it, how you should use it. You know, it's probably like 15 page document, but it's like your identity guide, your brand kit. So I'm sure a print shop could make one, you know, pretty quickly within a couple of hours, based on how good, you know, a lot of people are and just like Illustrator and stuff. But you could then feed that to whatever model you use to at least have start stuff looking a little bit better.
Why did you use an agency versus having, you know, someone with a design eye internally work on this?
Yeah. So we used a creative agency, in Nashville, Tennessee called Perky Bros. Jeff, maybe we should have Jeff on the podcast. He's awesome. And, you know, I was introduced to him. His firm had branded a couple big companies in Chicago. And we really went through this whole creative process where their team like interviewed us and they did a competitive analysis and they went and looked at all of our competitors and how they position themselves. And really, like when you build a brand, it's not just a logo, but it's the logo, the language, the taglines, the small iconography that complements it. And it's how you create like this through line with your brand. So things feel very cohesive. And it's like your messaging becomes all the same. And I didn't really understand the value of that beyond just a logo. And he did it for us on the NIL store. And it worked and it looked really good. And then we actually just had him do it again for a licensed brand that we're starting in the collegiate space called Urban Champs. And so wasn't cheap, but it was a really great exercise. It probably takes like 8 weeks or so.
I'm thinking back to running Printable. What should I have hired one to sort of elevate the brand? Is there like a company size time in which, like, what is the trigger of which you should be thinking about that?
Now, granted, Bruce, you are a designer. So,
but I'm not a brand designer is totally different than like UI designer, is different than illustrators. Like,
yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you can hire them at different price points, right? Like based on the experience and the scale, right? So you could probably find someone for $3,000 to $5,000. You can also find one for $20,000. You can find one for $100,000. Having a brand strategy is going to be helpful for appearing more cohesive and bigger than you might actually be. And so, you know, if you go to a website and you go into a business and it's branded, you know, like when you go into a coffee shop.
Yeah, you can notice certain or like, oh, wow, this is designed a little bit better. It's not like slapped together.
There's napkins that match this and the instead of like just a chalkboard behind the thing. And there's something about a good brand that makes you feel a certain way. And so, you know, how do your emails look? How do your websites look? How do all of these things look and feel? And you kind of know, you know, shops that have good brand identity, like I know Superior Ink and I can see it without looking at their logo. I know Oklahoma Shirt Company. I know Printed Threads. You know what I mean?
I think the better for me example is RealThread, realthread.com. And yeah, you're like, oh, wow, this stands out from the rest of everything else.
So, you know, shops can work with an agency, go through a creative process. Because there's a lot of psychology behind brand and packaging and boxing and all that stuff. And, you know, like it'll elevate you a little bit. It's hard to say there's a direct ROI from it. I'm sure there's an ROI from it, right? But it's just something you want to do to get to the next level. So I think like if you're a $1 million shop, you should go through a brand strategy if you're starting to go outbound marketing and starting to have look, feel, and all those things. I think $1 million is a good time to do it. Can I give you what we're talking about today?
Yeah. Go ahead. I've got some.
Do you want to go first?
Well, let's talk about the Q3, Q4 stuff first. Q3 just started, at least we're recording this July 8th.
What's interesting about our business is our Q3 and Q4 make up 58% of our revenue. So we're kind of like the second half of the year has to be much better than the first half, but that's always been the case for us. I don't know if that's the case for the rest of the industry. Maybe, maybe not. That's the academic calendar. And a lot of times Q4 is absolutely bananas. And everything we want to do in Q4, I feel like we start thinking about in like September. You know, we just turned a corner for our company. We're getting ready for the second half. And I'm already thinking about Q4. And so I wanted to, for a couple minutes, because we do a podcast every year of like how to have a successful Q4. I think we should talk about how to have a successful Q4 planned in Q3.
Way to kick this off, because I think you're more forward looking. And one thing I missed out on, I feel, and or just didn't do enough, was reflect a little bit backwards. So I thought the first part of this was, well, let me step back. I watched this documentary on Tom Brady, and, you know, total beast. You know, is always doing the training and studying and this and just always trying to improve and be, you know, at a painfully top tier of his game at all times. And so one of the things, though, that I felt related to a small business owner was the fact that it's not that he's playing all the time or even on the field all the time or doing strength training all the time. He's doing a lot of reflecting. And part of that is like this tape review, like they're constantly watching tape of themselves and of competitors and analyzing it and talking about it and discussing strategies around it. And I always thought that reflecting on the business and looking back was kind of silly. Like I thought it was like, I've got so like, I'm so week to week right now. I just got to get through the week. I got to get things done. Here's my task list. Here's what I need to be able to focus on, but never really stopping and giving myself a little bit of time to just reflect on how the last quarter went. And so I thought that was pretty silly, and I was hoping to help share this with other people to take an hour, 2 hours, something to be able to do that. So you're not on the same treadmill over time. And here's like a couple of questions I thought were important that I wish I would have asked. First of all, now that the first half of the year is over, how did it go? Like, from a high level, no numbers, how do you feel about it? Like, do you feel super stressed out? Did it go well? Did you like it? Did you enjoy it? What were the things that you worked on that you cared a lot about? What were the things that you want to get off your plate that you hate doing and hate spending time on, but continually just pick up over and over? And then I think you can start to look at the numbers, right? And how did things go? Like, who are our best customers? Who is a customer that we probably don't want to be able to deal with? Who is someone that maybe we should do a time study on, like Justin Lawrence did, and discovered that it wasn't profitable to continuing their work, but you thought it was? Team wise, who's crushing it? Like, who should I just, hey man, I just want to tell you thank you. Let's go out to dinner, take them out to lunch, whatever it is. But on the flip side, who needs to go? and then when? So what is the game plan there so that we can really elevate the organization? So I thought those were, I don't know, 5 to 7 different things that helped. That stuff doesn't take that long, to be honest. You could do it on a drive, but I do think it helps to write it down or write an audio note or whatever it is, and use that to then think forward into Q3 here and Q4, which sounds like you've got a good game plan of how you're thinking about that.
Okay. I'm going to put this in this is actually really, really good, Bruce. This is a top 10 list of everything you need to do to reflect on the past 2 quarters before you can plan for the future. Okay. I'm going to rip through these so that people can take notes on this, because I was just taking notes on you were saying them. 1, how did the last 6 months go? 2, give me an inventory on your time. Did you spend your time wisely? 3, who are your best customers? 4, who are your worst customers? 5, who crushed it on your team? Who didn't crush it on your team? 6, who needs to go? Who do we need to work on? 7, what was the most fun moment? Like, what's one of the biggest highlights you had? 8, what was one of the lowest moments? What was something you don't want to do? What's your anti-goal? Are we on 8 or 9? I forget. 8 or 9? 9. 9, how did the financials look? Did you make money? Yes or no? Why or why not? 10, how did your sales reflect to the money? Meaning, did you do more for less? Did you do less for more? How does your top line actually compare to your bottom line? If you answer those 10 questions, I think you would have a pretty good outlook on how you should plan for the next couple quarters. What do you think of that?
And I didn't also realize how invigorating it was to be able to step back and get excited about moving forward. So I think if you're feeling like you're still in the treadmill and you're really just trying to get through the week, everybody has that, but at least take some additional time at the quarter to think, give yourself a half day or an hour or 2 hours, whatever it is, and answer those questions for yourself.
So I want to start to talk about Q4. Is that fair? We've reflected, and this is totally open. Like, we just kind of, we talked about this last night and we're like, let's just do this live a little bit. So I think if I was thinking about having a perfect Q4 this year, the first thing I'm going to look at is my past Q4 to see how my numbers did. And I'm going to look at what revenue target I want to hit. And I need to do that now because I can't wait till September. So if last Q4 you did 300 grand and you processed 300 orders, this Q4 you want to process 400 orders and you want to do 400 grand. Let's just say that's the growth you wanted. So like, I think you have to reverse engineer what you want to do in that Q4, and you need to like have it very, very clearly. And I don't think it needs to be wildly aggressive. I think it just needs to be attainable. So I think you should just quickly know what those numbers are. And then I think the third number is how much profit do you want to make in Q4? Because Q4 is when you should start to get very profitable on the year. I think, at least, right? Higher profit items, things like that. So like, I think step one is know your past numbers and get your future numbers. That would be the first thing I do to have a successful Q4. Your turn.
How are you thinking about that? Whatever you're comfortable sharing on Canvas Inside is, I'm sure you've got a top line revenue number and let's say a profit number. Do you then try to break that down into what that means, you know, for each team? Is that coming down to, hey, we need to work on, is it like a one-off marketing project to try to drum up more demand? Is it more outbound sales like you talked about? Is like, how do you think about the focuses, right? Cause there's always a lot of, I think what happens is you set the revenue, maybe it's a little bit aggressive and now it's like, go get it. But there's a million things that you could potentially do. And that, I think that creates a situation where you don't do very many of them and we end up in the same situation.
Yeah. So, actually in Fabric, our CFO came and spoke, Steve Watson came and kind of shared under the hood of how he does it. He creates the projection for the year, whatever the number might be. And he has that broken out per quarter, per revenue segment, per department. So NIL online needs to do this. Wholesale needs to do that. Greek needs to do this. Greek online needs to do this. And he spends a lot of time studying that and figuring out what that projection looks like. And then he goes a step further to say, what are the metrics that will get us there? So this is how much we got from email revenue. This is where so then him and every department leader will actually reverse engineer how to get to that number. So it feels very attainable. So when we're walking into Q4 or Q2 or Q3, there's a bingo card that he has created for us that we have to fill out essentially, which is like our L10. And if we do these things, we will get to those numbers because sales is a lagging indicator. The activities are the leading ones. So that's kind of how he does it for us. And then we track it every day.
So the shops that you consult, let's say a 5 to 10 person shop, how can you relate that to them?
It's like my middle name, baby, AOV.
Oh, okay, okay. So you're probably simplifying all the metrics. There's not as many people to delegate off the numbers to. I feel like the owner has to carry a lot of it.
But you know what? They don't. Like we just talked to Colton, right? Like at Stay Golden, like smaller team pumping out numbers. Everyone rallies around an AOV and a volume number. So like, you know, if you know that you did 300 orders in 3 months and you're like, I want to grow by 20%, that's 60 more orders. That's 20 orders per month. That's one more order per day. That's what you have to worry about with your team, how to get one more order per day.
Got it. Wow. Okay. So that's how you break it down. That's how you share it with the team. And you're just talking about the same numbers with the team over and over.
Just, hey guys, don't worry about anything else. You just worry about getting, you know, like if we on average get 5 orders a day, let's get 6. What do we do to get 6? Everything goes back to getting 6. Everything goes back to that. And like when you get it, boom, we got 6 for the day.
Okay. I like it. I like how you broke that down. They simplified it.
Okay. What else are you doing? There's things that we wish we do in Q4 that we're always too late on. What else? So we talk about our numbers. We have a projection. We have a model. We have goals. What else are you starting to plan now for Q4?
I don't know. Tell me.
What's all the stuff that you're doing in October? What's all the stuff you're doing last second in November, December that you should be doing earlier?
Probably sales outreach to get prep for Q1.
So Q4 is the best time of the year to run online stores, right? Whether it's employee, like holiday online stores, employee online stores, you name it, they're really high value online stores. So I would put together a marketing campaign to reach out to 200 customers now to start an online store like in October. So that if the online store runs in October, the employees will get their stuff in November. It'll be ready for holiday parties.
I like that. That's huge.
Okay. What else? What else would you start right now? We always start doing holiday gifts and kitting for our top customers. And every year we say that we should use this as inspiration so that other companies will do kitting with us. And so we curate these amazing Campus Ink boxes. They got speakers in them, cups, mugs, tumblers, all that stuff. And we send it to everyone. We get it to them in like November. And in there, we put a note saying like, hey, if you need stuff for, if you need stuff, let us know. And people will call us and it'll be like December 5th. It's too late. What if you started doing all of your holiday appreciation stuff now? Everyone started getting their holiday, like your VIP customers are getting stuff earlier. Let's just say they're getting it October 1st. And in that, you put a note saying you're getting your holiday gift early this year from Campus Ink, because we want to do your holiday gifts for your clients. Let's get started.
That's really smart. Do you ever give kit examples for, it's like, you know, tier A, tier B, tier C to them to be able to pick?
We are always so late on it because we're so late on doing our own that it's like, ah, crap, next year.
Sure.
So I'm going to write this one down and tell Jenna and the team is I want to send out our holiday gifts by October 1st.
I always just thought as a customer and someone sending out our employee gifts, it was hard to determine. Like, I wish the shop we were working with would just say, here's like three good examples of stuff. Just pick one.
Ooh. So maybe one thing you're like saying, Bruce, is
a simple thing.
You're going to make the holiday gifting guide for your print shop and get it to your customers early. That gives them good, better, best. And you're going to do that by September and talk to a bunch of different companies so that those EAs and those marketing departments can start working on it now.
Yeah. Like, hey, $50 box, $100 box, $200 box, whatever.
Okay. I want to talk about, ooh, equipment and tax planning.
Yeah. You're the tax man.
I don't know. You're more of you. This is like Dave Ramsey. Dave, every year I buy equipment in December because I hear on a podcast you can deduct everything and I'm still not profitable. And I don't want that to happen this Q4.
I love a good Dave Ramsey video.
Don't you feel like the end of the year, everyone's rushing to do everything when it comes to like equipment buying or making these changes, you know? And so it would be wise for you to meet with a fractional CFO or a tax planner or figure that out now so you're not making impulsive decisions at year end.
That's a great point. We would always think about that. December 15th, holy crap. What are the things we need to pre-buy now?
Yeah, I feel like you just blow money at the end of the year just to like get that down or whatever.
Right. I think, well, part of it is not knowing fully what the profit amount will be and that what you want to invest in. But you're right. Maybe you could have two different options. It's like, okay, here's a 100K option. Here's a 500K option or whatever your numbers are. And these are the things that we'll invest in a bit more.
I feel like that's good. This is hopefully an inspiring 10-minute riff on what you should be doing to plan for Q4. If you've got any other Q4 ideas and you want to get ahead of the eight ball, shoot us a message. Proactive Q4 work. All right. That's what I got on Q4.
All right. The last thing I just wanted to share was I was realizing that there's a magical role in every business that can help have outsized returns. So one of the things I think that owners really get bogged down doing is just all the things all the time for way too long. And so can you bring in a person that starts to handle that? And I was listening to another podcast and they talked about the founder was very focused on product and sales, but he was so bogged down by all the operational things, the hiring, the projections, the, you know, just all the day-to-day fire type related stuff. And he said he brought on a COO to be able to help them. And that was next level improvement on allowing him to focus on that kind of stuff. And I know Brett Bowden talks a lot about this, where he brought on a guy that really just helps take off all of those aspects from his plate. And, you know, this could be I think this is a little bit higher than a production manager, but like a head of operations, a chief operating officer, whatever it is, but to be able to take a lot of that operational work off the plate, things like building a hiring process, just dealing with a lot of the HR stuff, the backfilling, the training, onboarding new hires. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why we don't want to always up-level a team is because the pain that it takes to be able to get someone else on. Fixing broken stuff, just stuff in the shop, stuff that you have to buy, just constantly, you know, buying little things here and there all the time, or approving those, owning budgets, creating simple forecasts, helping to own payroll or managing vendors, one-off projects, being able to help execute on those and allow the owner to be able to elevate up and either focus on the sales or focus on the directional and let them be able to execute. That was a really cool listen though, when he shared that helped him unlock focusing on the things that he really cared about. And, you know, maybe you can't afford this role to your 15, 20 ish people, but that sounded, you know, V2 level of just a production manager. What do you think? And it sounds like your CFO handles a lot of this too. And that's what reminded me when you're bringing this up.
You were basically saying, like, how do you clone yourself?
Yeah, but like handle the minutiae, like someone that loves the minutiae stuff.
You know, take me out of the picture for a second. There are some businesses that I really admire in the printing industry, like Oklahoma Shirt Company. You're talking about Tess, who works with Justin. Maybe we got up to Justin, because you listen to every episode, even though you're a number one guest on here, we let Tess on the pod. Tess is Justin's right-hand woman, makes everything hum. Watson is my right hand, does, you know, I was telling someone, I said, Watson knows what balls I'm going to miss, and he can just throw the bounce pass as I'm running in and it'll come to me, and he knows exactly what I'm going to mess up, where I'm going to fumble, what I'm bad at. And it's almost like we can kind of swim synchronously together. And I think finding that person in a company is so incredibly hard, Bruce. If we could all do that today, we would.
Yeah. And I think it gets undervalued though, because it's not like a salesperson where they're generating more than they're bringing in. So it's hard mentally to stomach bringing that person on.
Yeah. But perhaps you could maybe take inventory of what are the three things that absolutely crush me, that I'm spending way too much time on, that I need to get off my plate, that I need to find I need to plug in. I think that's kind of where you start, is trying to take inventory of everything and then seeing if you can cluster those buckets and put a job on it. Because until you get, I think the part that's deceiving about this, Bruce, is you're like, you just listed all these things. Are you ever going to find a person that can do everything?
I don't think everything, but I do think there are Swiss Army knives that can take, that enjoy patching problems and creating solutions and the process aspect of it.
If you could find someone that could do 50% of those, would you do it?
Yeah, I think at the 20 person mark, you have to.
Essentially, what you're saying is you're hiring someone that is not going to add revenue, but they're going to create more oxygen for you as a leader.
Right.
And hopefully with that oxygen, it gives you the ability to work on bigger things to grow the business. Or they could reduce a lot of waste.
Or just help keep you sane. Like, even if it just gives you space to do that reflection from Q3 and the planning for the Q4 stuff that we talked about.
Do you think there's a lot of these people out there, but shop owners do not have the level of trust to let someone in their world to do those things for them?
No, I actually think it's a cost problem. I think like a good person like this is going to cost, I don't know, like it's significant, right? Because it's not just an individual contributor. You do want someone with a little bit of skills. You want someone with some experience. You want someone that can really think critically, and there's a demand for that person. And so to attract that person in, you really ideally want a good comp package.
I sort of disagree.
You think it's a trust thing? Is it a trust thing, do you think, though? Or maybe the other side is it's just an ego thing of like, I can do it.
I think it's the owner that can't get out of their own way. More than it is are they able to do it? And do I have those people that can make it happen? Because the stuff that you just talked about, yeah, there might be high-level stuff like projections and banking stuff, but like 15 of the things that you just talked about are not high level. It's like managing the family a little bit, like being, you know, I mean, it's administrative, it's this, it's that. And so I think it's that an owner won't let someone do it because they don't trust them, or they think that they won't ever be able to do it with as good as them, or they're not able to let go. Because I don't, like, you're kind of talking about like a high level executive assistant.
And yes, I don't know what the title is. And it sounds like that could be, yeah, you're right. Like that also solves it.
If you found someone that came from the teaching industry that wanted a career change, it's not like teacher, you know, it's not like I think you could afford it. You just need someone that's hyper organized, that can do things, you know, is kind of a Swiss Army knife, but then also you can trust.
So I think that's one of the most undervalued things. And you're right. Maybe simplifying it down is a high level EA, and that's hugely helpful. So
I do think it's an in-person role though.
Ideally local to where you are, because I do think part of this is some personal related tasks that they can help. But yeah, if they moved or whatever, or, you know, someone that's great out of state,
Are you saying this, Bruce, because you're building a family and you're thinking about these things?
No, I'm not hiring for this role at all right now, but I think this is good. I have a couple more topics, but I'd like to save these for another one. I will drop a link lastly to this new dashboard. There's an analytics person at Thinktabo that put this together, and this is the new Printabo open data dashboard that I thought was pretty cool, and it actually works. The last one started to slow down, so can share that, and I'll put this into the description. You guys can take a look at that and be able to comb through it and see what makes sense, or maybe see what doesn't make sense.
Let's do it. Good to have you back.
Thanks. Hey, pronouncers, we'll see you guys in the next episode. Thanks for joining us as always. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.